Well, here we are again. There's more than a handful of us priests today up and down the breadth of this wonderful country living into the annual gift that keeps on giving. A Brit preaching on Independence Day. I've been known to ask parishioners from time to time what I should say on such a day like this, and on one occasion, I'll never forget, a parishioner quipped, "Well, you could start by apologizing." A parishioner this morning, as I woke in, who will remain nameless, said to me, "Well, happy Traitor Day." You may have seen or heard about the current sporting spectacle taking place across the pond at the moment. The European Championships, a once every 4-year event that pits the best 32 European national soccer teams against each other in a true festival of sport. A global television audience of over 500 million people will watch the final next Sunday. And it's also a celebration of national identity, national independence, and national pride. This is not a bad thing. And so today we happily acknowledge there remains much to celebrate about this country of ours, even if for a short season more. I remain a tax-paying legal alien without representation, with redcoat roots who will soon happily assimilate in full. As Europeans continue to celebrate through the avid support of their own national soccer teams, there was an extraordinary event in the early stages of the tournament that challenged the very notion of happy independence. A world-class soccer player from Denmark named Christian Eriksen was playing a match with his team against Finland when suddenly, in the 40th minute, and without warning, he literally stopped in his tracks and fell face first into the ground like a falling tree. And he lay there, motionless. The players immediately knew something was very wrong. They gesticulated wildly for the medical staff to get on the pitch. And as the doctors began to attend to him, his teammates formed a cordon to keep the cameras away from seeing what was happening. It became clear that Eriksen had suffered cardiac arrest. The stadium went deathly silent. The opposing fans ceased taunting and insulting each other. And around a minute into this drama, television cameras caught an image of Eriksen being turned over on his side. And he was deathly grey. He was lifeless. And he had expired. You could hear a pin drop in the stadium. And we were all witnessing in real time on global television the death of a much loved and remarkable young man. And then we all caught sight of the chest compressions. And it was clear that the medics had not given up hope and were working at a feverish pace to see if they could indeed bring this man back from the dead. Around 5 minutes in, a gurney was brought on, Eriksen's body was laid out on the stretcher, and he was wheeled off, surrounded by white sheets. Was he dead, or was he alive? A commentator reported he had just heard that a fan or two had seen a hand raised from the bed. And then a minute or two later, an Associated Press image went out on the wire that showed Eriksen being wheeled off, with his head ever so slightly raised, and his eyes open. And we were all looking at a man who had come back from the dead. Now, we could today focus on this story of a modern-day miracle, a resurrection of a dead man televised across the globe. It was beyond incredible, and I doubt I will ever see anything like it again in sports in my lifetime. But this morning, on this Independence Day, I'd rather focus on the reaction of the fans, the teams, the coaches, and the commentators. For 6 long minutes, soccer did not matter. For 6 long minutes, national teams and victory against the foe did not matter. For 6 minutes, one's nationality did not matter, for we were all rallying around a fellow human battling for life, and we were praying together for the impossible. And as we faced down that terrifying struggle, we were one. In the face of this adversity, we were one. And as we all saw the pictures of his eyes open and his hand lifted in defiance, we all rejoiced as one humanity, as fellow brothers and sisters who had witnessed together the improbable, the miraculous. The extraordinary had lifted us up out of our everyday lives and brought us together in common purpose and in time, common celebration. As if to illustrate that, once both sets of opposing fans had realized that hope had indeed prevailed and that life had had a victory over death, they roared back to life themselves. This time not singing and chanting about the glories of their independent and sovereign individual nations, but rather they sang to the resurrected, to Ericsson. In remarkable scenes, the Finnish fans yelled, "Christian," and then the Danish fans shouted back, "Ericsson, Christian, Ericsson, Christian, Ericsson." Two countries previously engaged in battle were now united in the one common purpose, survivors of a deeply disturbing ordeal. And a champion of one country had now become the champion of all. They had all entered that stadium on the day, more than ready to celebrate their independence, and yet the gathered had metamorphosized to acknowledge and celebrate their interdependence. A common humanity centered around one hero who had cheated death. Now, to be clear, there's nothing wrong with the celebration of independence. Indeed, one may argue a sense of belonging to a particular tribe or a specific creed or a particular nation state helps us develop, nurture, and strengthen our sense of who we are. And in that, we can find a sense of home, belonging, and purpose. But we are always stronger together. By acknowledging that our interdependence should outweigh our call towards independence alone. Now consider the story of David in our Old Testament reading today. David is seen by many as the model king of the chosen people, the builder and the instigator of the golden age of Israel, the great unifier of the tribes who ushered in peace and concord, and who set in motion the beginnings of a remarkably prosperous time for the Jewish people. And this was in no small way due to his pulling together of the disparate cords of tribal loyalties, and by his encouragement that these tribes of Israel relinquish their own independence and acknowledge that interdependence, relying on each other, is the way forward to further riches and to further harmony. Now, folks, to loop back here to my red coat past, I'm not suggesting we take a step back to 1776 and even begin to contemplate that that was a sorry loss of interdependence at that time. Indeed, any attempt to equate this notion of a truly remarkable coming together we saw at that soccer match a few short weeks ago with geopolitical unions and talk of one world politics is more than fraught, and some may say sheer folly. But what we saw on that soccer field should remind us, as we go about our everyday lives with our everyday cares and our everyday woes, it should remind us that interdependence in our spiritual, personal, and communal faith-led lives is an aspirational goal. That by acknowledging and living into the needs of others, by recognizing our common purpose and struggle, and staring into the eyes of those we know and love, and thereby experiencing the wider world of a shared humanity. Well, that's transformational, and will lead us all closer to the kingdom to come. And we saw that most vividly with the story of the resurrected Ericsson, the Danish man who came back from the dead. And as the cries rang out from the two sets of rival fans at either end of the stadium, it was not just the players or the fans there present who knew we were better together. But it was all of us watching around the world, tribal as we may be at times. I believe we all felt it. An acknowledgement that we are called and find rest within our interdependence. And regardless of our own independent lives, we are, in fact, all part of God's wider chosen people. And resurrection, rebirth, and new life is our reward. Amen.